Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. Before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision and her tiny living room, far from Nashville's music row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
The British band Idols has released 5 albums in only 7 years, starting with their critically acclaimed debut album, Brutalism, in 2017. The band's been growing steadily ever since, with their bombastic sound that brilliantly balances joy, chaos, and an often critical take on the powers that be. The 5-piece band's lead singer, Joe Talbot, has always channeled his personal pain, as well as his dissatisfaction with Britain's ruling class, into his songwriting. Mark Bowen, Idol's guitarist and producer, serves as Joe's primary musical partner in the band. They both bring a love of hip-hop and old-school soul and R&B to the mix, along with UK techno and house music. All of these influences can be heard on their latest album, Tank, a project produced by Mark Bowen, our friend Kenny Beats, and Radiohead's Nigel Godrich. On today's episode, I talked to Joe Talbot and Mark Bowen from the green room of The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon about their tumultuous creative partnership. They also explain how Mark helps temper Joe's sometimes passionate rage, and Joe breaks down why he'll forever despise England's monarchy. This is Broken Record, liner notes for the digital age. I'm Justin Richmond. Here's my conversation with Joe Talbot and Mark Bowen of Idols. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having us.
No, man. I mean, you guys are backstage at Jimmy Fallon right now. I don't know how you guys keep it together. I can hardly do one thing in a day. You guys must be doing, you know, a million things. It's crazy.
I mean, it comes with a sense of gratitude. Like, we've been fucking 15 years ago, like, crappy sound engineers would give us shit for turning up early. Do you know what I mean? And when we're all working 50, 60 hour weeks, and then we turn up, get paid $50 for a show and some warm beers, and then drive for 4 hours home to play to 10 people. But we knew the value of that. We knew the experience, and we knew how special the learning curve was. So when we're here and we're given opportunities, we take them, because that's a fucking gift. When you have a platform, whether you're lucky or not, and there's a lot of entitled people in our industry, but when you're gifted a platform, that is a beautiful opportunity to challenge yourself and give the audience back the energy they've given you by being present and fucking vital and full of life, because you only get one, and it's magic.
Is it weird to see the audience get bigger and bigger and more like ardent fans? And I mean, I don't know, it's gotta be insane.
But you get what you build, man. Like, we wrote a dialogue with our music that was a continual growth. You know, there's no surprises. We know what's happening and we know what we've made and we know what our audience is building. They've helped us from the start. So we've been carrying each other from 2011 and like, there's no surprises. You get what you work for.
I love how self-assured that answer is, you know what I mean? That you guys kind of know what you put out there. And it really, listening to the new record, you know, as the records have come out, it seems like you guys are pretty self-contained. Like from the jump, you guys knew what you wanted to say, what you wanted to do, how you wanted to present it. Even though I've seen the changes, like every album sounds or feels very different, every album is a really strong statement.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely our biggest kind of MO as creators is that we're very much driven by our intent and our intentions, you know, in the music and in the kind of creative with Joe's design and stuff like that. It's all very much there from the outset. It's not, you know, about jamming and, exploring things in that way. It's about how do we represent what we're intending here? It's not, you know, stumbling upon something. So yeah, it's a big thing in this band. You know, the title always comes first. The artwork often follows soon after. And then it's like conversations around that. And it's about kind of like Joe expressing what he meant when he gave that title. And then we talk all about that and talk kind of about maybe sometimes like what the song is going to be about or what the kind of music's going to be about.
But you don't really have lyrics or music at that point,
right? No, we don't have
abstract.
We don't have anything. It's all dealing in abstraction. And I think yeah. That dealing in the abstract is why we write the music first, always. Because it's easier to translate the abstract into something abstract. And then it's about Joe translating that into word.
Yeah, I mean, the whole purpose of every album is, you know, life is abstract. There's no actual rules. The whole point of philosophy, if you look at Plato's Republic, that's just creating structures that are imagined in order to understand the socio-political like narrative that goes on and how people are trying to find purpose and meaning to move forward. And that's what art is. Art is the bridge of existence. It allows you a sense of purpose and where you're at right there. And the more you understand your momentary purpose, the more you can move forward with vigor and understanding and more purpose. So every album is about the human condition and either how I'm affected by socioeconomic situations or relationships or whatever it is. I put that in, I document it, but that always comes from the present thing that's most on my mind. I already know what the next album is going to be about and what it's called. And with each one, and Bowen then takes my very small thing because I don't want to like overwhelm him, his shit with my ego. Cause it's not just about my ego. It's about some sort of landscape that we can make brilliant music on. So I just go, well, this is the kind of thing I'm going to be talking about, but I don't have any lyrics and I won't force anything, but this is what I'm interested in thematically. And then he goes, okay. And then he puts color to that and he puts, you know, some terra firma down.
Some strong terra firma.
Yeah, believe. And then like, and once that's all done, then I sing on top, but it has to be done.
Does the color that Mark comes up with in the rest of the band, does that help you sort of hone you in on what you want to talk about?
Well, it's Bowen and I that write some music. So it's kind of like just push and pulling together because he's a very philosophically and just emotional practice, very different to me. So between us, we have this like really beautiful push and pull creatively that allows me a new perspective. Just then I just wanted to smash the room up and I had to talk to Bowen. I'd be like, what do I punch? And he's like, well, how about you do this? And I'm like, oh yeah, of course. You know, he's my guy. And like, this because he's the opposite to me. So we understand that to create parameters within an album, it has to be out of boundaries. Mm-hmm. Create the boundaries, work within them, and you'll flourish. I mean, it's like, it's also not strict. If I'm like, no, that's not joy as an act of resistance enough. No. Like, it's not like that. It's like, this is where I'm at. And that's a conversation. And I think that's why our music very much sounds like an insular entity is because we allow each other to breathe. We are all five of us. Obviously, the boys write shit as well. It's not just me and him, but it's mostly us. We allow all five of us to breathe within a parameter, but we have to have those parameters. That's the best way of creating something. I think creative thinking comes from problem solving. And like, it's good to have that, like, do whatever you want, but you can only use the color blue. And you're like, oh, that's sick. Okay. Whereas if you're like, do whatever you want, you're like, okay.
It's a little intimidating. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's just a little flat. Like, what's the challenge in that? You're like, doing anything. That's not how life works. Life doesn't go, yeah, go ahead. We know how privileged we are. And we use our privilege. That there are people that the most brilliant and the most beautiful art comes from those voices that have a sense of tumultuous fire. They have to fight against something, whether it's oppression, depression, love, fucking civil wars, genocide, whatever it is, there's things under there. Like, that's when the voices are most resonant. I just think, yeah, you set yourself the boundaries and you set yourself the parameters to flourish. Obviously, like, to different degrees. I'm not comparing myself to fucking Billie Holiday, do you know what I mean? But I've been through some horrible shit and I'm allowing my traumas in order to make a more brilliant picture.
Mark, what's your sense of your guys' relationship? Is it similar?
Yeah, I mean, it's tumultuous, but that's good. That's where we get, you know, out of the rumble, you know, we start to move the earth around us, the water starts to flow. And I think that's it. It's like, we're just so different creatively as well. And it's useful and hard as well. You know, like for two people that are so, as individuals, so strong in their feelings about their creativity and about their creative output, it would almost suit us better to be auteurs and to be on our own, you know, just having people that are like, yes, around us, they allow that to happen. But it wouldn't have the same impact. It wouldn't work. It would be too self-serving and self-immolating as well, because it's like, you know, Joe's approach needs my touch and my approach needs Joe's touch. To become full, to become complete, to become resonant in that intention as well.
Mm.
I think that, you know, you can have two down the line or two abstract, two like, you know, flourishy or kind of a coming from a very different perspective. So I think it requires that for idols to be a thing.
But probably more generally too. I mean, I think that's the year 2024, it's like partnerships, groups, bands are rarer and rarer, but you kind of, you look back over, all of the best music came from on some level a partnership. You know, Off the Wall's a solo record, but that's a partnership with him and Quincy, and
yeah,
there's always got to be something to sort of rein you in or something to play off of, you know.
I think it's to play off of. I think it's also because, like, when you're creating art, you're creating something from your perspective to be observed from a different perspective. So I guess it's useful at that point of creation for the art to then be informed by something from a different perspective, because it allows the less of a singularity, because there is no singularity. There's no truth.
Yeah.
I'm all for, like, there are things that are created, like Nick Drake, Pink Moon, that's just him on his own entirely. I mean, maybe there was an engineer and a producer that, but I think you can get magic from anywhere. Some people are completely introverted. I think Bowen and I are, I'm definitely half-half, introvert, extrovert. Like, I need time on my own to process, but we process very differently.
Mm.
I think we just learn democratically, and, you know, people forget democracies need leaders. So, like, you know, it's taken us a few albums, but now we're at a point where it's like, this is your tune, man. I'm just going to sing it. You crack on. I'm like, I'm fucking ready. This is beautiful.
And that's a real thing as well that we've kind of learned as we've gone along, is the idea of service. You know, we've learned more about kind of serving the song as we write, but also service to each other. You know, there's times where, especially when you're dealing with Joe's lyrics and his vocal approach, you know, sometimes it's not what I've been expecting or would have wanted, but you can see that there's something that you needed to get out. And it's like, actually, yeah, you're right. This doesn't need my two cents right now.
And that happened with me with gospel. it ended up getting cut with nothing to do with me. But the piano, there was parts where it was just short. And I was unsure about the landscape, you know, because it's very you. It was you.
Yeah.
Like, binds for it.
So there was a different version of a gospel, a song on the new record?
Well, I mean, it's all there. It's all there. It's just like restructured a bit, as in there was something taken out. So it just happens once. But like, that's it. It's not like crazy. But like, I was just like, I felt how important it was to Bo and how amazing it was. So I was just like, even though I, you know, it got cut after your discussion with Nigel, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like my input, but I felt that. I was like, oh, I don't know. But I knew there's his.
But also the other thing was that whenever I showed it to you, you were like, oh, that's the verse. And I was like, that's not. I didn't know what bit was the verse and what bit was the chorus in my head. And whatever you said it was, I was like, that's not it. But then it has to be. It doesn't matter. It was the thing about gospels.
Was I don't know if they're already. It's just one big fucking thing.
I'm glad you guys are sometimes confused by your song structures too, because I was about to bring that up about one of the new songs. I'm often, I don't care, but if I listen back and try to think, well, what's the verse? What's the chorus? What's the pre-chorus? It's like, oh, I don't know. Like, I have no clue.
Yeah, I think especially on this one, it was about like, you know, one of the biggest drivers that we've not actually spoken about that much actually in press on this was like when we started out of this album, the things that we were listening to most and the things we were leaning on most was 50s and 60s pop music.
Mm.
And
cool.
And that's really informed it. You know, Roy is called Roy because I was trying to ape a Roy Orbison song at the time.
Beautiful song. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, that song's probably a perfect example of us two, like, not compromising, what's the word? Colliding. So I had this chorus. It was like a Lee Moses chorus that I wanted to write for like, what, 2-3 years? And I go, it's not the one. It's not the one. And Bowen had this, like, the verse and the bridge. And the bridge was the chorus. And I was writing it with my friend, like, trying to write it at home. It's the only thing I tried to write at home. And I was like, everything I'm writing isn't the chorus, but it works and is sick. And that's what is on the album. And then we were in the studio and we were packing down. The drums were packed away. It was only me, Bowen and John in the studio with Nigel and Miko and like in London. And I was like, fuck, it's the Lee Moses chorus. And then I wrote the drum beat in what, about a minute?
Yeah.
I was like, dagger, 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 dagger. And John was like, oh shit, okay, okay. And then like, I wrote all the fills, got it down in like probably 5 minutes recorded. But I was like, Bone, would you reckon? And we both were like, organ. I was like, organ line, 4 chords. And then we both, almost exactly the same time, sang the same notes, progression.
Wow.
And we were like, that's it. That's the fucking one. And like, you know, it wrote itself in like a minute. Like it just, and that's how 50s pop should be. That like soul, like 60s soul. It's like, that shit was natural. And like, so this is called soul music because it's the most humane fucking element of music. It's like, well, of course that's it. It sounds easy to write because it's so fucking innate in the human condition to listen to Otis Redding or Nina Simone or fucking even like the Flamingos and shit like that. Feels like you're being spoken to and you're heard. And when you feel heard, it feels like your limb. And like, that's what I want from pop music. That's what I want from soul music. That's why, you know, you get all these, like, I'll play my dad, Frank Ocean, Ivy. And he's like, all right, I get it. I get it. You know, but you would. No one could be like, what's this shit?
Yeah.
And like, you hear the soul, you know, it's soul. You feel the soul. Fuck everyone else. And like, we were trying to connect that. That's what we wanted. When I say I want to make people dance, it's about the magic of music that you get when you allow it in, but you can only allow it in if the message is portrayed in a way that allows you to feel open, you know. Yeah. And that's you know, the fable of the sun and the moon. If you just shine, you open that person up. If you blow hard and you get aggressive and you're trying to come on, just join us, it's like that doesn't allow a sense of dialogue. So like, it was all these things that we were practicing, and that 50s pop thing was the first thing that really melded us together with purpose. And then next thing I know, he's writing fucking all sorts of shit.
We're taking a break and then coming back with more of my conversation with Joe Talbot and Mark Bowen of Idols.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet. But you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
We're back with Joe and Mark of Idols.
So Roy became like the kind of like the leadoff in a sense. That was the thing that kind of made it all come together.
That was the only thing that we connected on, all of us.
Gotcha.
Completing something that we're all like, that's it. Everything else was parts. We came to the studio in France with 17 parts with like two or maybe three instruments on, but like a verse and that's it. So we had albums, right? We had nothing.
Yeah, that was it. And that was when the idea of the 50 pop thing became slightly more abstract. It was more just about tone and that sense, that untenable thing that you can't really put a name to. And then it was about being playful with structure and playful with like choosing your moments. Like I think, you know, another big moment on the album was the instrumental end section of Pop, Pop, Pop.
I have that highlighted to ask you, like, what is the hook? It's like there's sunbeams or sunbeams, and then there's the gold sugar part, and then it goes back to something. And it's like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it happens twice in really quick succession, and then one time at the end. And it's like, that song was really kind of like, very much for us, it was so abstract the whole way through, I think.
I mean, it came from my idea. I had the beat in mind for quite a while again. And like, it came from like UK Garage and Mika Levi, Mika Chu and the Shapes, which is like real grimy pop act that kind of crossed the line between sometimes grime, sometimes pop, sometimes indie, sometimes punk. Like, they did whatever the fuck. And it always sounded infectious, danceable. And I was like that. And their MySpace, what do you call it? Like, their description, genre description was pop, pop, pop.
Oh, sick.
Because it was kind of like...
I didn't know that's where it came from.
Yeah, yeah. So, it like, basically... which was referencing garage at the time, which, you know, everyone had the gun fingers. I didn't, obviously. I'm talking about like the in the garage scene in Manchester and London and Birmingham. Yeah. You know, it was real heavy gun crime in those areas, and it was a very beautiful community of people that made something great out of serious deprivation at the time. There was also a lot of bullshit, you know, as always, with the racist media attaching gun crime to garage. It was like, but the gun finger thing was a real thing. So I always thought it was kind of a reference to that, because some of their shit, the beats they used were kind of grime beats. Anyway, fast forward, and I had this beat that kind of felt like, because of the nature of sick beats, you change it from 120 to 140 to 160 to 180, you're just going through techno, garage, house, drum and bass. You know, and all those things, you put that beat on, no matter what the speed, everyone's on that fucking dance floor. And I wanted a beat that you can do that with. I mean, I'm guessing it's probably what, like 115 or something?
123.
123, okay. So yeah, it's techno beat, but it's got that kind of push and pull swing. So it's like, this was in our head, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then like, I started playing the thing and it bone took over, because I was playing this bass line on that, an open bodied bass. Just started feeding back like fuck on this pokey amp. So Brian was like, play that bass line, but like this. And obviously, I don't know how to play. You use feedback and shit. That's bossing. So he just finessed it. It sounded sick.
It was that thing. It basically, he was playing it, and you heard the original note, and then the feedback was creating a harmonic. But because it was a hollow body, you still had the original note in there as well. So yeah. It made this chord. And I was like, oh, can you change the feedback tone? And Joe was like,
I mean, I could keep hitting a single note if you want.
So I went over, and then we're like walking around, and I was like trying to find it. I was like, where's the next note in the sequence? Where is it? We find it. And it was like, oh shit, we got it. We got the sequence in order.
And then that was it. Then like it didn't sound like, but Bowen added the chords later on the Prophet, which for me, finesse the whole tune.
Yeah.
But like, in between that and that, Kenny and I are in the studio next door to these guys in France.
Kenny Beats.
Yeah, yeah, boy.
I texted him yesterday that Roy was my shit. I was like, yo, Roy is crazy.
That's sick.
He's like, Glad you like it. I don't know if he worked on that one or not, but
he worked on everything.
Yeah, yeah, he was there with us the whole time. So I was in there and I was like, started going in hard. And Kenny was like, nah. This ain't that, man. What are you doing? I was like, okay. And then, Kenny's got this amazing way of just like, he's very intuitive and he understands the person as a musician. So what I mean by that is, any person can sing, but a musician understands how to create a dialect of you outwardly. So you have an internalized group of masks that are all you. They're all true. But they come in cadence, they come in intonation, they come in timbre, whatever it is, tone. You can use that to truly portray your person, who you really are. And like, that comes from somewhere within that you learn. You have to have that openness with yourself and try new shit to you. Like, that's it. That was me when I was 12. And that's how I want to sing on this tune. I listen... This song reminds me of the Cordettes, and that was a time of innocence. I'm going to sing with that innocent 12-year-old voice, because that's what this song is, and that's who I am on this song. But you need someone as incredible as Kenny Beats who puts you in there. He goes, think about where you are right now. Think about who you are. Remember when you told me that thing 6 months ago about your mother that day, and you said that thing? That's you right now. Go. And you'd be like, that's it. It brings out that thing in you. And that's the voice. But that's the difference between a musician and a karaoke thing, is that you can easily... I was doing it the other day. We covered the Walkman. And I was basically trying... It sounded like I was trying to sing like Hamilton Lighthouser. Obviously, that guy's got a much better voice than me. And I reined it in, but I knew I had Kenny in my head, like, what are you doing? And I was like, okay, what will Kenny do? You know, you have to find why you want to sing that song. And then you portray that with your skill set.
Right. That's great. I mean, that's beautiful. I mean, back to the 50s and 60s point, it's like, how many times did artists do, I mean, they weren't covers, but like versions of things. And they weren't covers because they didn't just like ape whatever the, I mean, sometimes they did, but a lot of the great, you know, Aretha's Respect, her version versus Otis's. It's like, they're both beautiful, but Aretha clearly had a vision of herself for that song, you know? It wasn't just, let's do what Otis did, you know?
And it's also like, if you go back to the early first UK and US top 10s, there would be three versions of the same song in the top 10.
Yeah, that's like hilarious.
It's fucking wild. But that's it. Like, good example. I thought that A Change Gonna Come was by Otis Redding. I didn't realize it was Sam Cooke until like much later. And like, I was like, does that mean in my head that Otis owns it because it's the one that I believe in? But like, the context of Sam Cooke and the reason why he wrote it and the bravery it took for him to do that is insane.
Yeah.
If you put that in context of the pop machine then and how racist it was, the bravery is untouchable. But that, I'm like, this is besides the point. Otis's version is the one. Because it's what I learned it to be. And like, I think it's like, that's a sense of ownership. That like, if I own the Walkman's song and make it mine because I mean it, it's not my writing, but if I mean it, then it's as beautiful, you know?
I agree. I wish that way of thinking was a little more prevalent in music, because it's like, I mean, why not pull from other things, you know, like, or make a song yours? Like, that kind of, adding that kind of variety back into music would help make it, in my view, more interesting.
There's issues there, though. Like, if you like, I mean, how many writers did Harry Styles have on that album? Like, you get credit on all of it. I don't know how much he wrote. I'm not criticizing the guy, obviously. Like, I'm not going to lie. I like Harry Styles' music. But like, obviously, he had lots of writers on that. And I don't know whether I want to know that or I don't. I think if I thought that Harry Styles wrote it all, I'd enjoy it even more.
Yeah.
Not all of it. I just like his singles. Some of them are really good pop songs. I think like, knowing that an artist has, but like Frank Ocean is a great example. How many producers does he work with? Like, and it's still incredible to me.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't know, it's about kudos as well. I think the less I know, the better when it comes to that stuff.
Well, it's
I think, you know, that's it. If you ignore all the bullshit and the noise around the song, it's a good song. Because one of the things I fucking hate are these gatekeeping pricks in music to think that you're not allowed to like something because it's like up in the pop machine, or, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that I've got no time for that shit.
Yeah.
I think a good song's a good song. The less I know, the better. Because I'm a judgmental prick.
It's good to know about you. It's a good thing to know about yourself, you know, as you move through the world.
I appreciate your free therapy, man.
But but that's it. The mystery is key. I think, especially since becoming musicians full time and as a producer, and you kind of look behind the wizard's curtain, and it does dissolve away some of the mystery. And it's kind of I'm not as enthusiastic about other people's music anymore as I once was, because I've lost some of the sense of mystery.
Yeah.
Has it made making your music less fun in a way too, or no?
No, not at all. That's the thing. It's now added to that experience because I've got more control to allow the chaos to happen. You know, we're not sat behind the producer who's in front of us and they're in charge of all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gatekeeping some of the information and some of the way we could go about stuff. Now I'm stood up there and I'm going, nah. Or, you know, let's do this. Like, that was a big thing. Like, move on this album was about what we've done before in the past. And this isn't a negative thing. This is just what happens with bands, especially when they don't know a lot about production, is you bring the music, it guides the production, but you're never able to completely 100% get what you were trying to guide, because there's a confluence through the producer to go through. And what I wanted on this one was I wanted the production to inform the writing so that it was all unified. So that's why, you know, like on Pop Pop Pop, we were just talking about one of the reasons that song is so successful and that achievement around the UK garage kind of like aspect of it is because it's on a tape loop. And because the tape loop, because you're only hearing four snares ever, those snares on repeat, it becomes a drum machine. It becomes that thing that you can catch on to. You know what's coming up next. You do, it's that repeated rhythm thing, but even further down the line. And it's like, yes, now I can hear when that's happening in other people's music. And you're like, you know, it's kind of like, why is that so cool? And now I know why it's so cool. That kind of removes some of the mystery, but it also kind of adds another tool to the expression.
Yeah.
Whereas before we were like, we got so close with that, but it's not it. Now we're like, we got it. We got it. We've got the thing we're setting out to do.
I imagine working with Nigel Godrich too was like a big aid in that way, right? Like in terms of creating a more organic process between the writing and the production and all that. Kenny, having Kenny, both Kenny and Nigel involved.
Yeah, very much so. And like,
absolutely, yeah.
The cool thing about working with Nigel is that it's again coming back to that 50s and 60s pop stuff. There is nothing that Nigel Godrich does. I mean, he likes to keep the mystery alive. He doesn't like talking about his process too much. But there is nothing that Nigel Godrich does that people weren't doing in the 60s. It's just a taste thing. It's all tape. It's all these old crappy outboard stuff that's broken. It's all working around the restrictions of what you have to hand. That's what I love. And I think that that's very rare these days because we've all got access to everything.
Yeah.
You know, you've got splice, you've got like all your loop banks, you've got any kind of like process that you want to hand. You can just, you know, download the VST and away you go. You've got any kind of processing that you want. And you're losing the restriction that creates creativity, and you're losing the restriction that allows you to relinquish some of the control, because you're like, well, this is the way that it sounds going through this. Great. You know, like, and once you get into certain places and you find that little patch, that little thing, you know, like a reverb or something like that, that just, that'll inform the sound of the rest of the album. As long as there's a drum going there or something else in the background, the vocals splashing around, it'll feel like the album. So that was cool. That was really cool.
Yeah, he challenged us all in the right way. I found it very difficult at the start, but he was very patient and insightful. He was intent on making us as accomplished and brilliant as possible. And that meant being uncomfortable and challenged. And he is forthright in making the best of a song and an album, as Kenny is. And he worked us, and he worked us brilliantly, and I'm very fucking grateful that he allowed us the opportunity to make something great. Because, you know, it's like, it's a steep learning curve keeping up with Nigel Godrich and Kenny Beats.
Yeah.
You can't, like, it's not that fucking around time.
Yeah.
It's about learning, and I'm very grateful that they were also willing to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we can continue for at least one more album. If you're listening, Nigel, I'm fucking coming for you, boy.
I'm sure he loves to hear that. We're going to pause for one last quick break and then come back with the rest of my conversation with Idols.
As listeners to this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds has the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet. Finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers,
Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer helped shape the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, would spur each other on to tap into something bigger, realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bacharach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash, alongside a full ensemble cast, Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
We're back with the rest of my conversation with Joe Talbot and Mark Bowen of Idols.
Were you fucking around, or do you really know what the next album is? The name?
I'm never fucking around. No, yeah. I mean, I am, but not about stuff like that. No, I've got it. It's on lock.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the latest he's done this, by the way. He's normally doing it when we're in the studio working on the album, and then it becomes all he talks about during it's normally when he's done his vocals. He's like, so guys, yeah, I got the vocal, and you're like, Joe, there's still drums recording on this song, man. You know, it's just like, come on, man.
Yeah, but I mean, me and Bo talked about it 2 days ago over coffee in the morning, and I was like, I've got the new title, and sometimes it's not right.
No,
the first one, like Ultra Mono was going to be called Meditations, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because that was about stoicism. And I realized I'm not patient enough to be a stoic. I'd rather punch something. So, yeah, fuck the king.
It's a rough time to be saying fuck the king, man.
No. It's not. No. There's a separation, you see. You need to understand, and it's a good opportunity on a podcast like yours to do that. There is a difference as a citizen of our country between the human being that is Charles, who has cancer. There's nothing fucking brave or funny about celebrating someone else's demise with cancer. It's pathetic and stupid, but I will forever despise the monarchy until it's abolished. There are people starving in our country, and the poor have been blamed for shit that our government and the aristocracy have implemented, and our country's falling apart because of that, because of the greedy 1% and the fucking horrid shit that they're getting away with on a daily basis, one of which is the monarchy. It needs to stop. And until that happens, I will say fuck the king with my eyes wide open. I know what I'm saying, and I fucking mean it. Fuck the king and everyone that reigns after him.
It's not my place to speak on that. I just was going to say, I love the conviction.
Yeah, as a human being, I want for better. That's all.
Ultimately, you seem consumed and driven by passion. You see a better way forward, a vision for something to be better, to be fair, yeah, and just.
It's not, and like, the, you know, there's a fine line, and it's why I'm exploring different tones and approaches to my message, because I understand I come across as a sanctimonious prick. And the last thing I'd do is judge someone who I feel is making a loveless choice in a voting ballot, or a loveless choice when they're crossing the road, or a loveless choice when they say something to someone online. Mm. Like, I may judge their action, but I understand the person behind that bullshit is scared, frustrated, hungry, fucking exhausted, overworked, all these things. Yeah. And, you know, it's up to us as the purveyors of messages within the populace to try and cut through the lies in order to create a sense of empathy and love, in order to move forward with grace and power that is the people connecting on a human level.
Were you a reader growing up? You have such a really beautiful way with words, you know, whether it's lyrics, whether it's speaking extemporaneously. You know how to wield the power of words, man, you know?
I think I got tired of breaking my knuckles.
You needed another way to let that out. And you really almost punched a wall in the other room?
No, that was me. I would never punch a wall. Yeah, I think my friend said it brilliantly once when I was younger. He was like, there's nothing more stupid than losing a fight to an inanimate object.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, like, you're never going to win either. What I meant was I was very frustrated. And when my frustrations come out outwardly, I understand that comes across quite aggressive. And so I needed to cool off and then just process it with Bone, because Bone's very level-headed and pragmatic when it comes to shit like that. And he's who I trust. So I go to him. That's all.
But it's
I'm not punching anything. Not anymore. No.
It's often that kind of like that aggressive kind of angry approach is from a place of optimism. It's because you expect better. You hope for more from the world. You hope for kindness, empathy, understanding, and people to be as passionate and as driven and as wanting the best as you do. And then you get disappointed by that.
But yeah, I mean, the other thing is that I'm just like, you know, you've got to do it yourself, otherwise it doesn't get done right. That's what me and Marco, our manager, say all the time.
Well, that's one of the tenets of Stoicism as well.
Yeah.
You're slowly coming around to the idea.
I'm basically Marcus Aurelius.
You are not Marcus Aurelius.
I cannot picture Joe as a Stoic. I mean, maybe, you know, borrow some tenets. It doesn't really seem like you can wear that.
Yeah.
Speaking as a man who has Marcus Aurelius tattooed on his ribs, you are on the journey, Joe. But
I'm Biggie Smalls.
That's
it. Okay. That's who I got tied on.
You seem more Tupac Shakur to me than Biggie, man.
That's true. I'd say artistically, but I never got on with Tupac's music, to be fair. I appreciate it, obviously. Like, I'm not fucking stupid, but I just love the flow.
The flow of Big.
All day. Yeah. Anyway, so
you're a fucking fire hose like Pac, man. Like you got a lot to say. It's like you watch Pac interviews and you're like, this motherfucker at 22 was like it's like this guy was a fucking genius. It's kind of, I don't want to call you a genius to your face. It's
no,
your back.
I'm not a fucking genius. But here's the thing, and I'll tell you what, if you listen to his stunning, glorious fucking parents and what they stood for, and you know, I came from that. Okay. I am half my mother and half my father, and I owe a lot of that to them. The moral stance, my father's an artist, my mom was a fucking powerhouse, and they were full of love and empathy and courage in different ways, and I'm a product of that. My dad was a socialist, is a socialist and an artist, and my mom was a fucking beautiful dancer. That's where I come from, and I you know, you can see that Tupac and the beautiful things that he stood up for, you know. And the same as Bowie, like I see his parents in him. If you know how beautiful and wonderful his parents, his mother's a powerhouse, his father's a powerhouse in different ways. And as a parent now, I realize just how fucking magic and important that is.
You have a kid?
We do, both of us. Not together, though. No.
You guys would make great parents. Are you kidding me? Like, you guys are like the perfect co-parenting situation.
No. It's the thing about the difference between us. It's okay whenever it's like your creative baby, but like, because we can cross each other's lines. But I think on parenting, it's real tough when you cross each other's lines.
Yeah. I did want to ask Joe, the repetition in lyrics. Mm-hmm. Really cool. I don't know if it's something you do consciously, if it's a flow thing because you're into Biggie, if it's something to do with the meaning of the words, but like it comes up a lot.
Yeah, I like wordplay, poetry, and obviously rap music. So I kind of grew up on hip hop, and that thing about a vocal hook, you know, like a sample hook or a vocal hook, you know, I just see certain things like a sledgehammer. If you want to force something home or make someone uncomfortable or make something iconic, iconic meaning that if you squint, you see something blurred from a mile away, you know what it is because you've seen it before, you've heard it before. And I think, like, it's not necessarily the most obvious part of the song, but if you use repetition in a way, like The Fool did it, there's a lot of post-punk that did it as well.
That's true.
And, like, I just think it's wordplay. And I think there's many ways you can be beautiful. And I think hip-hop's the best example for that, obviously. Like, for me, repetition is one. It's like a trope of ours. I like, it's part of Idols' language.
And on this album, the more so, I think, in its purest form regarding, like, samples. I think, like, both of us, you know, your background's kind of hip-hop in your influences, and I come, like, I listened to loads of techno and hard house and stuff like that as a kid. And so it's all, like, you know, samples and actual repetition of sound. And I think on this album, we've always tried to do that, you know, we've done it in the post-punk way, that kind of kraut rock way, where, you know, you've got that motoric beat and the bass line and it's looping round, and there's, you know, pocket and feel kind of comes out of that. But like on Tank, for the first time, we literally are using samples of ourselves.
Yeah.
It's not all just played. It's like, you know, the sound on pop, pop, pop. You know, we only got those frequencies once. We didn't run through the whole song.
Yeah, I'd tell you what. So when we're in the studio with Pop, 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 when I was in with Kenny,
yeah,
we were trying to figure out a chorus. And I was like, I thought about a hip hop sample hook. And I was like, this is our hip hop sample hook. I was like, I'll just sing it far away from the mic and distort it, and it'll just sound like an old sample. And he was like, fuck yeah. So I just did that Sunbeams, because it's based on a Roald Dahl quote where he says that, like, basically shitty people and their ugly thoughts come out in their face, and they look mean and they look like fucking horrible. Not necessarily ugly people are bad and people. What he's saying is that, like, if you're a nasty prick, you can see it in your face.
Yeah.
But he said that good people aren't, and people that have beautiful thoughts, it shines out of their face like sunbeams. And I love that quote. And knowing what he was like, he thought he was a real cynic. But he wrote these really kind of, like, uncanny children's books that were kind of a bit sinister, but sick and empowering for children,
yep,
in like a wicked way. So I wanted to do that quote. So I chucked it in a sort of song spice for my kid. I wanted it to be like a separate thing that's a sample and a nod to the song. It doesn't lyrically fit with what I was singing in the verses, but it fits in the theme of the song as a sample.
That's cool. And that's what I love about it too. It's like, there's a lot of repetition, but there's also a lot of chaos in your songs. And so it's never like, there's repetition, so I know what's next, or there's repetition, so I've heard this before.
Mm.
And I think that's what makes your guys' music so listenable, you know? Like, just makes people want to go back and listen more and again. And, like, you know, listening to Brutalism again recently was like, there's new things I'm hearing in that, you know, that I haven't listened to that in a couple of years. And
yeah. And
I can't believe you guys have 5 albums in 7 years. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, I mean, we're very, you know, we're privileged, man. We're lucky. We've got time and space and money to make beautiful shit. So we'll keep making it until we're
different. Not a hunger for it as well.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah, that's part of our privilege.
Yeah.
It's not just about our circumstance and what we've been allowed. It's the fact that we get up in the morning and we got shit to do.
Yeah.
That's fucking a gift to me. That's like, a beautiful thing.
If our tour got cancelled like next week, I'd be like, right, let's get in the studio.
Let's get in the studio. How many people?
It's
100%. This is, what else are you going to do? Like, not do shit.
I mean, Kenny's like that though as well. Like, it more so.
He's insane.
His
workload is insane.
It's crazy. You'll be like working with stuff in his house and chilling, and then like these other people will just turn up. And he's like, yeah, I've got this stuff. You're just like, my brain has just like dumped everything it has. How can you possibly have space to dump more? And
he's going to bring out the best in that person.
Exactly.
That day,
like, yeah.
Sick.
I mean, I guess that's the thing about great producers. Like, how split, like, I couldn't, if I thought about it like a father, I couldn't imagine splitting my time between like 8 different families of kids. It's like, what the fuck? How do you, but people like Kenny have this beautiful gift of showing up, being themselves in all these different ways with all these different people.
And he shows up, he's himself, but he's also like, I've never seen him not change a room. Mm-hmm. Like he comes in the room and he'll just like, he does something profound to people. It's an energy. It's class.
Mm. Well, I appreciate talking to y'all and good luck on the performance tonight. It should be fun.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Great. All right, much love.
Later, guys. Thanks to Joe Talbot and Mark Bowen of Idols for talking about their creative push and pull and the recording of their latest album, Tank. You can hear it along with our other favorite Idol songs on a playlist at brokenrecordpodcast.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brokenrecordpodcast, where you can find all of our new episodes. You can follow us on Twitter at Broken Record. Broken Record is produced and edited by Leah Rose, with marketing help from Eric Sandler and Jordan McMillan. Our engineer is Ben Tolliday. Broken Record is a production of Pushkin Industries. If you love this show and others from Pushkin, consider subscribing to Pushkin Plus. Pushkin Plus is a podcast subscription that offers bonus content and ad-free listening for $4.99 a month. Look for Pushkin Plus on Apple Podcast subscriptions. And if you like this show, please remember to share, rate, and review us on your podcast app. Our theme music's by Kenny Beats. I'm Justin Richmond. Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
Musora is your access to online music lessons for guitar, piano, drums, and singing. This is your chance to reignite some old musical passions or pick up an instrument for the first time. Connect with more than 100 of the world's best teachers and musicians. You'll get 7 days totally free to try it out. And then it's just $30 a month, less than a single private lesson. I mean, why do we do Broken Record? Not just because we love hearing from great musicians. We do it because we think that there is something beautiful about the appreciation of music. Don't you think we need more of that in our lives these days? That's the mission of Musora. To inspire, educate, and connect musicians. Enjoy unlimited personal support, weekly live streams, student lesson plans. It's like having a personal music teacher, only much, much better. Just go to musora.com, MUSORA.com, to start a new musical journey today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.